Hey guys, this is Joe. Today I want to introduce you to our partner Vanta. Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can unlock major growth for your company and build customer trust, but the process can be time intense and costly. Vanta automates compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business, helping you enter new markets. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora that trust Vanta. Claim 20% off Vanta at vanta.com/startupradio. That's vanta.com, spelled vanta.com/startupradio.
When you're an entrepreneur with a great idea, it can be daunting to find funding. Startup Raven takes the process out of your hands by helping entrepreneurs connect and learn about potential investors all in one place, without any long-filled forms or 1,000 questions. Sign up for early access at startupraven.com.
Welcome to startuprad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from startuprad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. Today, I would like to welcome Maximilian here with us from FinAuto. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Joe. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Totally my pleasure. You are the current CEO of FinAuto because your predecessor had to step down due to an unfortunate incident. But we will dig a little bit into you, what you guys are doing, and how you guys are going to make car subscription successful, because that is something even the big ones have been failing at. And it's for me totally fascinating how a startup could make that. But before we get into that, I've been digging a little bit into your LinkedIn profile, as everybody can do. We'll link it down here in the show notes. And I've seen you've been, let's say, at the usual suspects. There is the LMU University in Munich and the Center for Digital, CDTM, the Center for Digital Technology and Management, which is part of Unternehmertum associated with it. And everybody who'd like to learn more can go down here in the show notes and talk a little and can hear how they are helping Munich to become a startup hub. They're really, really awesome. Strongly recommended. But can you tell us a little bit how you got from Munich to Bocconi to Munich to Berkeley?
Yeah, so I grew up in rural Bavaria, and so Munich was always kind of like the big city and the big leap for me. Like, all my friends went studying in Ratisbon or in Deggendorf or in Passau, like I would say also smaller Bavarian cities. And for me, Munich was always...
Hang on. I grew up in a rural town. How rural are we talking? I grew up in a town with less than 200 people. Can you beat that?
No, I cannot beat that. So the town that I grew up in had like a gymnasium. It had like 7 supermarkets. So it was like not as rural, like, but it's quite far away. So it's like 2 hours in the northeast from Munich. It's on the at the border to the Czech Republic. And I think we had 3,500 inhabitants, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. And so basically, you want to go to Munich,
yeah,
and study there. And how did you then get from there to Bocconi?
Yeah.
And how did your journey develop there? And when did you realize I want to do startups?
Yeah. So I studied economics. And so during studying, I always thought like I'm going to end up as a financial investor, basically. And so I looked for ultimately the best universities in Europe. And Bocconi was, or still is, one of the best finance universities in Europe. And so I thought like, okay, I love Italy. I can speak a little bit of Italian. So why not spend a semester abroad there? And there is actually no cooperation between the LMU and I think any Italian university. But I wanted to go there desperately. And so I completely organized the exchange myself. So I just tried to find a sponsor at Bocconi. I found a scholarship that would pay for the whole thing, and ultimately was able to go to Milan for half a year, and not only really enjoyed the university there, and it was also a very, very different way of teaching economics compared to Munich, like a little bit less numbers and data-driven, I would say. But I really enjoyed the time in Milan as well, to be honest.
I can totally see that. What actually surprises me is that there's no cooperation between LMU and a university in Italy, because I've heard quite frequently, especially in terms of food, that Munich sees itself as the most northern city of Italy.
Maybe I'm also getting that wrong and I just didn't find it back then. But I mean, also I was dead set on Bocconi, right? Like I was like, hey, I want to go to Bocconi specifically. Like this is the place to be. This is the best university of Italy, one of the best in Europe. And so maybe that fixture also is clouding my memories. But I definitely was very, very driven to kind of like find a way to end up there.
I have to admit, I also love Milano, especially it's not too far away from the Alps. You can see it from some of the rooftops, and it's also not too far away from the ocean, which is also very beautiful, has amazing restaurants and the espresso bars that even inspired Starbucks.
Yeah, and you also have a bunch of like a concept that is called aperitivo, which is the best thing for a student that ever existed. You basically get one drink for, let's say, €5, and then you get food, a buffet for the whole night for free. And that is amazing for a budget-conscious student.
I see. And how did you get then into CDTM?
So I was talking with a very, very good friend of mine about kind of like what else is there that we can do. He's an architect. I'm an economist. I think we both, after studying these two very, very different study programs, became kind of like we love digital technology and we're looking for a way to kind of like learn more about it, but also do more projects about it. And so we came across CDTM and started talking about it. I started talking to several people. I had one acquaintance that studied there. And I was actually really falling in love with the curriculum and the opportunity to study at CDTM, because it felt like something very, very hands-on, very, very project-driven, very practical. So in very stark contrast to the quite academic environment of economics itself.
Mm-hmm. And from then on, you also went to Berkeley?
Yeah, that was actually via the CDTM. So the CDTM has a bunch of partner universities, and that was a lot easier to organize. But you also needed like to talk to a professor and kind of like get approved to kind of like move over there. And that was also a very, very fascinating period, not as practical as the CDTM itself, but also very, very cross-functional, which is, I think, one of the common themes throughout my life, that I've always kind of like been trying to understand different disciplines and kind of like learn from everyone that I come across. And so Berkeley was definitely that for me as well.
Hmm. And I also heard that kind of sparked the idea of Finn inside of you. It's associated with a Ford Mustang.
Not yet the idea itself, but it definitely is now one of the main sources of motivation that I have every day when I work on Finn. So ultimately, I bought my first car there. So in Germany, I never needed a car. I lived in Munich. In Milan, you don't need a car. Once you come to the Bay Area, you realize, public transport is not really a thing here. And so the need for a car becomes significantly stronger. Like if you want to go to a supermarket, you need to have a car. If you want to go on a weekend trip, you need to have a car. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, I looked at kind of like, how will I get a car now? And it was a really, really painful process from kind of like figuring out which car I want I ended up getting a convertible Ford Mustang that was quite run down. And as a result, I also had to worry a lot about repairs, about maintenance, about insurance, like all these things that you typically don't think about when you think kind of like, you see an advertisement for a car and it promises you all of this freedom, like all of that excitement, all of that experience. But when you actually start buying one, it can be quite a hassle and it can be quite painful.
I remember friends of mine at college in Texas also had a car, a quite old Oldsmobile, where the reverse gear didn't work. So always the lightest person had to get in. We had to push it and he had to steer it.
It was thankfully it wasn't that bad, but I also had a bunch of problems. Like one of the cats was broken, and yeah, it was like a whole thing that kept me busy for the better part of half a year. Yeah.
Ah, I see. And then you came back and I can see you've been doing a few analyst positions in private equity, venture capital, something like that. And then somehow you enter business development at startups. How did this happen?
So before I was joining CDTM, I was doing an internship at a private equity, not fund, but like a firm, like basically a family office of like three very, very rich, high net worth individuals that kind of like wanted to play with their money. And that was a very, very interesting experience. If you recall, like all my life, I thought I would end up in the finance industry. And so when I ended up there, I realized maybe it's not a perfect fit for me. I'm one of the people that is very much driven by kind of like knowing at the end of the day what I have achieved throughout the day. Like I want to see kind of like which problems have I solved? Did I make a difference today? All of these things. And in finance, you have responsibility for a lot of money. You make very, very large decisions. But for most of the days, it can be somewhat a grind. And so I actually thought to myself, how can I actually get more responsibility? How can I have more impact? And that's why I switched to startups and also why I was very interested in joining CDTM.
Mm-hmm. I see you've been there. One of them, I don't know, a healthcare venture startup. And then you started venture development. What did you do there?
So yeah, like Kaya Health, which was the kind of like first real proper job that I had. Like afterwards, I wanted to kind of like shorten my learning periods, and I wanted to learn a lot more and see a lot more different things in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. And so, venture development is just a fancy name for ultimately saying you do everything that is necessary to get a company off the ground. Mm-hmm. And so, what I did at that fintech company builder was I ultimately tried to find customers. I designed logos. I built products and minimum viable products specifically, just prototyped a lot and tried to find ideas that we would be able to get off the ground.
Mm-hmm. And from your CV, it looks like you've been jumping from there into co-founding Finn Auto as chief growth officer. With the background, it kind of makes sense. But I want to stop at one step in between, because you're a member of a supervisory board of classical German Mittelstand. Can you talk a little bit about here the clash of the cultures?
Of course. So I was very, very lucky to kind of like after kind of like seeing a couple of different experiences and seeing a couple of different industries, I was asked to join the advisory board of a Mittelstand company. And it's a very, very small one. So it's like a 20 employees. It's a couple of millions in revenue. It is a old school business. It's a publishing company. And so, joining the advisory board there is a vastly different experience to what you typically see at a startup. So there is quite a strong contrast of cultures, and not one or the other is better. But I think both can learn from each other. And so when you look at kind of like what is the underlying skill set that these companies do very, very well, I think it's actually quite a good learning experience for founders to look into the Mittelstand and see kind of like, what can I take from this? What can I learn from them? And how can I make my own company more profitable, more resilient, more stable, more oriented for the long term compared to what many startup founders are optimizing towards.
Mm-hmm. I see, see. And then you jumped into Finato. What was like the founding story behind it? Was it like a bunch of guys sitting around the table drinking beer and saying, oh, let's do a startup? Or how did you approach this? And what was like the moment you said, okay, I'm in, I'm going to co-found this?
Yeah. So I knew for a while that I wanted to start a company on my own. Like after seeing this for a couple of times, I was kind of like very, very driven and motivated to find a topic that I'm excited about myself. And to be honest, I never thought initially that I would find it in automotive. So it's actually something that was a little bit of a pleasant surprise, because one of the companies that I worked with was also Picus Capital. And I worked quite closely with one of their partners. And that was actually the push that I got to ultimately look a little bit more into automotive. And I really, really appreciated that, because then I remembered the buying experience that I had on my own and kind of like how painful it was, and found a lot of motivation to ultimately build Finn. But I met along the way like five very, very talented co-founders, and mm-hmm. how we met each other was always in a purely professional context and via very, very different channels. But kind of like we always felt a very strong sense of alignment. So kind of like we all had the same goals to ultimately like simplify that experience, to make operations more efficient, to kind of like build a product that is really loved by its customers. And so it's something that that united us and that resonated with us. But ultimately, I didn't know any of my co-founders before co-founding with them. We spent a lot of time together and we worked a lot together until we said like, hey, this is the right group. But I think it's a quite unromantic story compared to many of the other startup stories out there that sound like more like a rom-com. I've known this guy for the last 12 years and he's my best friend from school. For us, it was actually quite a different experience and rather a professional connection.
Mm-hmm. You guys offer car subscriptions, but not only here in Germany, but also you entered more than a year ago, I do believe, the US market, right?
Yes, we entered the US market 1.5 years ago. And yeah, that's kind of full circle, right? So like my poor buying experience was in the US, in California, but so we are not there yet, but that's definitely on the bucket list to ultimately go full circle here and be able to say kind of like now we are solving this in California as well.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is you guys are headquartered in New York City and you split your time between Munich and New York City.
Yes. So I'm roughly 70% of my time in New York and 30% of my time in Munich.
I see. Do you also do like pre-Christmas New York? I love that Rockefeller Christmas tree lighting ceremony, the Christmas spectacle at Radio City Music Hall and all the touristy stuff like that.
I did it like the first PE experience that we talked about, like mm-hmm. that was in New York, and I did all the touristy stuff back then, but now it's a little bit more kind of like head down and work, but not as much touristy stuff anymore.
Do you drive? Because I was back in 2014, I was driving in New York City. I had to do some stuff there. And I realized how freakingly expensive it is to park a car there. It cost me something like $50 a night, all the toll roads and all that stuff. Do you use a car yourself in New York City?
I don't.
You don't. Okay, I see. And can you tell us now a little bit that we have established a base? Can you tell us a little bit about how you guys are making it possible to subscribe to cars and really apparently make it better than your competition? Because BMW and Mercedes, they first merged their car sharing ventures and now they're in the process of selling it and you guys are still going strong. What is the difference in the approach? How did you start differently? What are you doing differently?
Yeah, I think you can often ask these kind of questions for startups generally, right? Like, why is it possible that kind of like a very small company, Steve Jobs called it like a pirate ship, how can a pirate ship compete against the Navy? And that is very, very difficult to answer always. I think most of the time it comes down to focus and speed. So because you only do one thing, you can do it really, really well and do it a lot faster than many of your competitors. And so this is also how I look at Finn and why we are able to offer very, very exciting user experiences. We are able to do from morning till evening, nothing else, but make sure that the process, the product, and the user experience works. But we also have a very strong team, a very strong culture that enables us to ship products quickly and get results very, very quickly. And I think ultimately some of these larger corporates are also constrained in the environment that they currently operate in. So sometimes it's not easy for them. Sometimes it's quite political. Sometimes they don't have the resources they need to ultimately build this up. Whereas for us, it's a little bit easier because it's the only thing we focus on.
To be clear, you're not yet profitable, but you're working towards get your unit economics towards profit?
So our unit economics are profitable, quite significantly so. And we are working towards profitability, like net income profitability. So to really be a profitable company within the next year and a half.
Mm-hmm. For everybody who doesn't have a business background, unit economics means you're half a subscriber and basically you're making profit with him. But if you add all the layers, all the stuff on top of it, then you're not profitable yet.
Exactly. And so like if you need to pay a bunch of salaries, you need to pay rent, like all these things kind of like still make it unprofitable. But as you are growing, you hopefully can add more subscribers and not rent an additional desk for every subscriber, but are able to scale the business as you're growing the subscriber base.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking about your investors. You had recently debt funding in total almost $1 billion, according to Crunchbase. Do you have some tips for entrepreneurs here? I do know there's a handful of entrepreneurs. I just talked to somebody who got a seed round and he told me, you know what, the Startup Radio inspired us to get here. You don't need a rich family to be an entrepreneur. Can you tell us a few secrets for the people out there just learning entrepreneurship?
Yeah, of course. I think like the main advice is to ultimately be persistent and solve a problem. I think that's unfortunately the not so sexy advice that I can give. I think like fundraising in a lot of ways is like sales. So you ultimately want something from somebody. And to get there, you need to be very convincing. You need to be a little bit charming. You need to have very good arguments. You need to be able to ultimately just make your case and convince the other person that they are doing something great by giving you money. And so what works for us incredibly well is just being extremely focused on the KPIs that we are producing, on the numbers that we are generating, but also give a very exciting view of the future. So tell investors what you can do with that money and what you will be able to build, how you're going to use that money. And I think like balancing these two is something that is very, very important. And I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs that do either very well, but not both.
Mm-hmm. I see. And hang on, I just had a question. Oh, yeah. Going a little bit back to the car subscription, because I forgot something very important to ask, because you have business in Germany and you have business in the US. Do you see major differences here? I mean, not only that the US guys always love to either drive Porsche or pickup, personal experience.
Yeah, so pickups are definitely a thing in the US and not in Germany. I can second that. But we see a very, very strong product market fit in the US as well. and even a little bit of a stronger product market fit, because the US market is a lot more convenience driven. It is a lot more has a lot more acceptance towards e-commerce. And so we see a very, very strong traction in the US market. Something that just like feels like something stupid to say, but it's nonetheless very, very true. The US is just huge. Like, it's such a big country, and it coming kind of like from Germany, where everything is fairly close together, where it takes you 5 hours to get from Munich to Berlin. The US, in contrast, is just gigantic. And that is definitely a big difference, where logistics and operations become a little bit more important compared to Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember from Texas, where depending on the traffic jams, you can spend 8 hours driving within the state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Easily.
Well, just one more out of curiosity, what is your most popular car in Germany versus the US? Do you know that?
In Germany, funnily, it's the Jeep Compass. So it's a it's a US car. I think it is heavily driven by the cars that we were able to buy over the past 2 years. And so I think if people see a great car at a great price, they love it. And so we have a like Jeep Compass is one of our best sellers, but also Opel Crossland, I think, is a great value for money car, a really, really good vehicle. I think in the US, the best-selling car is a Chevy Blazer. So kind of like a small mid-sized SUV. But we also have trucks that are selling quite well. Tesla is also one of our most selling brands. We very much focus on EVs. So like more than 30% of our portfolio are electric vehicles. And so we see a very strong demand there as well.
Mm-hmm. Going a little bit looking into the future, because we're already talking around 25 minutes and I don't want to bother you too much. I've read some articles that you may or may not plan an IPO in the future. So at first I was thinking, are you open to talk to new investors? And is this IPO really a potential future scenario?
So I think it's definitely a future goal. So we are not working right now at this moment in terms of like, when do we list and which, like where do we list at and how is the IPO going to look like? But it is definitely one future goal that is uniting us and that we want to achieve over the course of the next years. And we also do kind of like I think there's a bunch of steps that you need to do towards an IPO to professionalize the company, to make sure that you have great forecasting, that you have a really, really predictable company. And we are already working towards these goals. And so it definitely is an objective that we have going forward, but not something that we work towards. And ultimately, if you answering the investor question, I mean, we are always open to see kind of like how we can partner up. Ultimately, my goal is to maximize the value of Finn down the road. So the goal is to see kind of like how into what company can we build Finn 10, 15 years down the road. Of course, what will be the valuation then, but also much more important, like how can we solve more problems? How can we make our customers' lives better? And also how can we ensure that we are a great environment to work at? And so we are always interested in talking to partners and having conversations, but there is no concrete plans at this moment.
Mm-hmm. I see. A trick question. Would you rather IPO in Europe or in the US?
So I've heard a lot of differing opinions on that. But if you ask me personally, not what is best for Finn, but where would I love to kind of like stand and ring the bell? Doing that at NASDAQ, kind of like at Wall Street, that would be really, really cool. I think that would be definitely a life dream fulfilled. So I think I have to go with New York there just from a personal perspective. I think for Finn, it really depends on the revenue mix and the geographical mix that you will have by the IPO. If you are predominantly German company, makes sense to IPO in Germany. If you're predominantly a US company, it makes sense to IPO in the US.
Mm-hmm. I see. We're getting towards the last topic of our discussion here. Usually people already know who you are, what the company stands for, what they're doing, stuff like this. I would be wondering, are you currently hiring?
Yes, we are currently hiring, and we have a couple of positions that are quite important to us. And so if you are looking for a job, then definitely look on our careers page. It would be great to have you on board.
Yeah, everybody who'd like to learn more, they can go down here in the show notes. We link your career page, and the code word is Startup Radio to get into an interview, right?
Exactly. If you attach that to your CV, it definitely doesn't hurt to do research on the company that you're applying to.
Great. Maximilian, was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much. Hopefully we can catch up at one point in the future, maybe pre-IPO or after another funding round.
Of course. It was great to talk to you, Joe.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.